The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I'm a little bit happy for Ole Miss fans, but almost none of the famous people. It is Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday, and I hope everybody is having a glorious day wherever it is you're listening. Thank you for coming here. It's March, and we're talking college football, and I think that's kind of awesome. Said I'm a little happy for Ole Miss fans, but we're not the famous folks. If we're fans of our most, like Ashley Judd's a fan of Kentucky. She's famous, but most of us are not Ashley Judd or as famous as she is. Most of us are just fans. Most of us either went somewhere or grew up somewhere, and that's just how it is. And so the famous people involved are the folks who wind up on TV and have money associated with it or opportunities at the NFL level, et cetera. There are a lot of famous athletic directors that they're famous folks sometimes, the networks. I said I'm a little bit happy for Ole Miss fans. But for most of the famous people associated in and around Ole Miss football, while Hugh Freeze was the head coach, the balance sheet, outside of me being a little bit happy for Ole Miss fans, virtually no one benefited beyond what was normal to happen in Oxford when it comes to football during the previous 50 or so years. The fans got a few really awesome Saturdays and nothing else. Nothing unusual versus what else had come. Did y'all watch Breaking Bad? A lot of people went, of course I did. Some people didn't, and I'm actually jealous of you. I wish I had not watched Breaking Bad, and I still had all of it still in front of me. It's a tremendous series. But one of the things I realized kind of in the final season was nobody does anything with all of this. Nobody gets anything from all of this money. Like all of the people, the guy who owned the fried chicken joint, he had to purposely front like he was the manager of a fried chicken joint. The lead character, what? He couldn't. No, nobody got anything. I was like, all of this money, and it's not doing anything for anybody. If you look at what had happened over the last 50 years in Ole Miss football, even the most high-profile, famous people involved in the Hugh Freeze era, none of them had a very different, none of them really got anything that they wouldn't have gotten in any other era of Ole Miss football. Now, I'm going to talk about the fans and what they did get. And I will admit, you just have these strange memories for some reason. But the 2011, this is not a strange memory. This is a horrifying memory. Houston Nutt was the head coach of Ole Miss. And I say this all the time. I didn't go there. I ain't with you. I like a lot of folks who are Ole Miss Rebels, and I've always had a grand time there. Some reputations are earned, man. Dan, you been to the Grove? Some reputations are earned. But as far as on field, like 2011, here is why 2011, it has to be and always will be the absolute low point in Ole Miss football. It's not that you went 2-10. It's that what you went 2-10 and your only dubs were over Southern Illinois and Fresno State. Now, if there is any way to make a 2-10 where the only wins are Southern Illinois and Fresno State, if there's any way to make that even worse, you had to vacate the wins. So that is how you take a 2-10. So you were actually 0-12. Can we all agree that will stand? It'll always have the belt. It will be the low point Ole Miss football forever and ever. Amen. Then 2012 happened and they hired the Arkansas State coach. And they didn't go 2-10 or 0-12 via the NCAA. They actually went 6-6. And I cannot tell you, and I had to go look this up. I cannot tell you what day of the week January 5th, 2013 was. But I think it was like, I don't know, Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, whatever it was. As I recall, I was sitting in like an oil change place watching Pittsburgh and Ole Miss play in the Birmingham Bowl. I think it was the Birmingham Bowl. It was at Legion Field. And there were 60,000 people there. And by my count, like, and I asked folks, I was like, boy, that's a lot of blue and red. And they're like, 55,000 Ole Miss fans went to Birmingham to a game in that stadium against a bad opponent. That's called let's represent. That's called we're all excited again. You had just gone the worst version of 2-10 that could exist. You didn't get to keep the two. The very next year, you're 500. And I've told you, I love the history of Legion Field. That it's an ashtray. It's awful. It's terrible. It's a bad place to exist right now. And they had a bowl game there, and it wasn't any better 10 years ago. 55,000 Ole Miss fans said, "I'll make the drive. I'll buy the ticket." Packed out, man. It may have been the final, like it's New Year's Eve Times Square event at Legion Field, maybe. And so that's when it started for Ole Miss fans. When I said that the only people who had an unusually good experience during all of the Hugh Freeze era at Ole Miss, which I like, you know, 6 years, the only folks who had an unusual experience were the fans. And I said on a few Saturdays. Now, beating number 6 LSU at home, yeah, that's not nothing. That was a Saturday where it was pretty dang awesome. Beating Alabama and then, you know, next year beating them again, that was pretty awesome. Some of your Egg Bowl moments, pretty awesome. That's for the fans, and I just wrapped it up. In fact, I can't when was the Sugar Bowl? I think it was a Friday night. I said a bunch of Saturdays. You had like 5-6 Saturdays that were distinctly different over anything for the previous 50 years. So if you're an Ole Miss fan, I'm happy for you. And then you had a Friday night in New Orleans. Almost none of the famous people for all of this big Saturdays, and we beat Bama twice, and we had a Sugar Bowl. For the famous people, no one benefited beyond what was normal to happen in Oxford. If you were associated with that program for about the previous 50 years, all of that ugliness for so many people resulting from Ole Miss breaking rules to get players. What do you mean? They put a bunch of guys drafted. Okay. Now I am not going to necessarily count 6th and 7th round guys. That Chad Kelly was the 253rd player. Now that could have happened any year, but there are times when a program wins and a player will be able to get a back-end draft choice that maybe he wouldn't get up. Well, he was with them. We'll take him. And you see what happens. So I'm going to talk about just the Hugh Freeze era, guys drafted in the first 4 rounds versus when Houston Nutt was the head coach and it eventually wound up as, yeah, this is really bad and we're taking 36 kids and a lot of JUCOs that questionable background academically and this just really isn't working. What are we doing? We got to fire him and now we're in Dutch with the NCAA. Oh, that was a precious time. But in 2009, you know what Ole Miss had? 2 first-round draft choices. Michael Orr, Pray Jerry. Mike Wallace, that big old wide receiver, is a third-round draft choice of the Pittsburgh Steelers. The next year, Dexter McCluster, second, tiny little running back, second-round draft choice. Chiefs, John Jerry, went to the Dolphins, third round. Like, Patrick Willis was a first-round pick. I mean, you're talking about a program that even when they were winning six games or four games or no games, at the top of the draft, they were getting some elite players into the program. Hugh Freeze became the head coach, and it took a minute, but all of a sudden these kids were in their third year, and Laramie Tunsil and Laquan Treadwell became first-round draft choices, as did Robert Kimdichie. God bless Laramie Tunsil. He's gotten a second contract. He may have gotten a third now, like a redone, but he broke off. Laquan Treadwell and Kimdichie, I don't believe, are in the league. Treadwell has now been somebody that you can pick up in week nine if you need size and a guy who, you know, whatever. But, you know, Cody Core getting drafted in the sixth round by the Bengals, that's no different than Jarrell Poe after he finally got on the field going in the sixth round in 2011. That's just, you look at a guy and go, all right, yeah, well, we have a particular need and it's eye of the beholder. About the first four rounds, that's when it's universal. So, you know, Evan Engram, first-round draft choice, God bless you. You didn't have enough another draft pick until the sixth round that year. Breland Speaks, who I always liked. He's a second-round draft choice. And okay, Rod Taylor went in the seventh round of the Bengals. I'm saying that, like, the famous people, the players, that we go, in our minds, we have this picture of, nah, hang on, Chuck. He populated that roster with all kinds of big-time recruits, and he did. But if you go look at the recruits and what actually it all was, the 2013 class is what did it. That's what everybody went, oh, my God, what happened there? And I had a vision of like a car carrier with Lincoln Navigators, and you're just driving all over handing them out. 2012, Ole Miss finished 48th in America. In recruiting. Now, this is just rankings and projections about how you think it'll turn out. 2012, they were 48th. 2013, 8th. I know. So it turned out different. No, who were the famous folks? Robert Kimdichie was a 5-star. Did it really turn out for him? He was a first-round draft choice. I'm listening right now. Whoever it is listening right now, if I had a $100 bill and I had to bet your net worth versus Robert Kimdichie's net worth, I think I would bet on you. And I don't know anything about you. Like, that's how much I know about him. Laquan Treadwell. My understanding, pretty good guy, works hard, bad luck with, you know, an injury, and then it didn't work, and he was too big and didn't run fast enough. Tony Connor. Man, I was the biggest Tony Connor's mama didn't like him as much as I like Tony Connor. What a good player. And then he got hurt, and he was a tough guy. And then he got hurt again, and then he was still a tough guy, and then, like, well, let's move him closer to the line of scrimmage so he doesn't have to run as much, and then it's just kind of hard when you're making your living as a tough guy, legit tough guy, and you keep getting hurt. So you go through and look. Kids who had really turned, yeah, they were a 5-star recruit, and they played and were good. It didn't turn out. Tony Connor, he would still be starting if he was Ole Miss, if he was at Ole Miss. It didn't turn out for him. Turned out for Laramie Tunsil. Hugh Freeze, it didn't turn out for Hugh Freeze any differently than it turned out for David Cutcliffe. He went away, came back. If you compare all the famous people during this, quote, era with went to the mountaintop, leave out the details. It didn't turn out any differently, really. The fans had a couple of great Saturdays, and that's awesome. For the famous people, it was business as usual. We're going to break. Get into it this Wednesday, next on Chuck Oliver Show.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Wednesday on the Chuck Oliver Show. Just like every other day, it's all college football. 9 states, 66. Thank y'all for the blessing. Appreciate that happening. There is a wild rumor going around in Oxford, and I do not believe it's true, but there is a rumor, scandalous about the football program this spring, that the media, it like part of the practice they're actually able to watch includes quarterbacks with the ball in their hand. I was at spring in Knoxville one year. Fulmer was still there, and they run like, I don't know, 24 periods or 26 periods, whatever it is, and like every 2 minutes or 5 minutes, however long, you're down a tower with an air horn, change periods. So they said, yeah, come on up to Knoxville. I'm in Atlanta. It's about 3 hours. Come on up here. Yeah. I was like, well, how much will I get to see? Oh, you'll get to see about 8 periods. I was like, well, there's no way that. Okay, sure. I got to see punters. I got to see stretching. I need to see the quarterback with the ball in his hands. And there's a rumor that the media gets to see that in Oxford. I want to welcome on right now, good friend of ours from Super Talk Mississippi, that giant network. It is Michael Borky. Brother, how you doing on this Wednesday?
Yeah, I'm doing well, and we did get to see quarterbacks with the ball in their hand. It's amazing.
It's outrageous.
I know, right? Like, the NFL is an $11 billion a year business, and their media gets to see basically everything. But college football, as much as we love it, doesn't generate $11 billion a year, at least for the schools that we want to talk about. And yet their practices are shut down like Fort Knox. It's crazy.
I think this is the wrong spring for Spencer Sanders or any quarterback to not be healthy. And so the kid's been limited. Has Walker Howard at least, I'm not saying he can play, he can pick up, I'm saying as far as physical skills and he can spin it, that kid apparently has been pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah, that's the most interesting thing coming out of Ole Miss this spring. I mean, I know Pete Golding's a story and all that, but the competition between Jackson Dart and Spencer Sanders, I mean, it hadn't even started yet. Last time I was on with you, we talked about the possibility of him re-aggravating that shoulder. Lane Kiffin, who never talks about injuries, a guy could have his leg amputated, and he would still say, we hope he plays on Saturday, gave us the information yesterday confirming what we already knew. Spencer Sanders is not healthy, and he can't really throw, and he's really limited in practice. And Walker Howard has apparently seized that opportunity, and everything I hear out of practice is, Dart looks better, he's more confident, the team loves him, all that. But Walker Howard has surprised even the coaches that knew how great he was. And it's not just the ability to throw the ball. Like you said, it's for a young kid, apparently he's really mature and has really understood like the system and has taken on a leadership role. I mean, it's so fascinating with his emergence and what you hear out of camp, because he is the focus of conversation, not Spencer Sanders and not as much Jackson Dart as you would have expected.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and say it because I appreciate the young man. Quinshon Judkins got me paid last year in Daily Fantasy. About week three, I was like, I don't care if he's had an amputation. I'm betting on him to get at least a touchdown. But part of that was because Ulysses Bentley, it never really got going. I was talking Ole Miss back when they had started. They've had 4 or 5 practices now, but when they first started, I was like, hey, what's ahead for Ulysses Bentley? And nobody really seems to know other than he's talented, but it just hadn't been healthy and consistent yet.
Exactly, and Kiffin had high praise for him yesterday. They need him to be, because there were times last year, the Alabama game, for an example, where Zach Evans got hurt early in that game, which was kind of a theme for him, and Bentley wasn't available. And that last series of the game, Kiffin said they didn't give Judkins the football, you know, their best player, because he was so gassed because he had to play the entire game. They need somebody that's able to spell him. And he didn't have that last year. He had over 30 carries in College Station. I mean, he's a workhorse, and he's a great player, but you don't want your running back taking the amount of hits that Judkins had last year, and they need Bentley to be healthy. What he showed you a year ago wasn't enough to even know. Like, I can't sit here and tell you, well, he's healthy now, and he's going to be great, because when he was healthy, he didn't get to put enough on film for us to know if he's ready and capable at this level. He's kind of a wild card on this team that nobody's talking about, because as good as Judkins is, you can't just have one of those guys. You need more than one. And last year, they played a lot of games with just one.
All right, last thing, flip it around. You're right about Pete Golding. There's plenty to talk about. I want to ask about Ashante Sistrunk, maybe one of my favorite players in the SEC, and he flies around just like a killer on special teams and such. What's he going to be actually on defense, though?
They need him to be. They need him to be huge. I mean, that's the fascinating thing about Pete Golding and his system is, does he have the personnel to run it? I mean, if you look at the linebacker room, they have Sistrunk, who's back, and Kari Coleman, who played a year ago. But Sistrunk was in the portal anyway. Yeah. They convinced him to get out. But that's it in terms of guys that have played linebacker in an Ole Miss uniform. They added a couple from the portal, but that's still only four guys that have actually, you know, played significant snaps at this level. They need Sistrunk to be good, because if he's not, I mean, that room is already so thin and so unproven. And they say that Golding's going to want to win some four linebacker sets. Well, they've only got really four of them that can play, at least you know can play anyway. So he's got an incredible upside. They need him to take that step forward, though, because if he doesn't, it's kind of be tough sledding for them.
All right, last thing. Give me 30 seconds here. Like, somebody asked me, you know, what thing about Willie Gay? I was like, he'll hit you. And that's the first thing I'm going to start with a back seven defender. Who's the thumper in the back seven, if you have to say? 30-second flyover.
Oh, the thumper in the back seven. Oh, man. They lost a bunch in the secondary.
This is not a good response. That means that, like, nobody's jumping. I'm not expecting Patrick Willis, but, like, this is not a good response.
No, it's not. It's a huge concern. I mean, I guess Sanders, the transfer, is somebody that they need to be that, but they're really unproven in the back end now with the transfers that they had leaving. Finley's gone and Reese is gone. I mean, there's a chance that they kind of struggle defensively. There's not a whole lot of proven back there. Well, yeah. We'll have to see it to believe it first. I think Coleman, I know you said back end of the defense, he does play linebacker. He has the best chance to be a kind of guy like what you saw with LSU last year, a linebacker that really is great in open space and a thumper there. But in terms of the secondary, I got to see it first, because I don't know who these guys are.
Yeah, there is nothing. It's its own dynamic. A quarterback's at the line of scrimmage, and he's like, all right, where's 27? Because somebody find 27. There is no dynamic like it. And if you don't have it, you don't have it. And that means it's an opportunity. Hey, Michael, thank you for your time, brother. Appreciate you coming on.
Of course, guys. Anytime.
Michael Borgie, again, Super Talk Network. I think there's 17 or 16 stations, maybe. But there is that element to the quarterback. Well, as soon as he gets the signal and he's got it out, he's like, all right, where's 44? Okay, there he is. Well, we're going to the other side of the field. That's what we're going to do on this play.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Nine states, 66. Thank y'all for that blessing. Talking college football, it's what we do year-round. And if you will give me, it's my show. You'll give me 30 seconds. I need to yell at clouds. And then we're going to have a guest on, and he's going to say, no, there's actually a bit, but I'm going to yell at clouds for a second. What we get from spring practice now is assistant coaches being hired and players leaving. Like, after the team has practiced like four times. Hugh Freeze told me the third-team quarterback, who I don't even think does what Hugh Freeze wants, he's really improved. Like, that's Hugh Freeze's big, that's the big takeaway. What's going on with the quarterback position? Well, you know, this third-team guy that I didn't recruit and doesn't really do what I want, he's really better than he was last week. That's what you get from spring. You used to actually kind of get some conclusions, maybe. It's all different now, man. Literally, players going a week of practice and going, yeah, I'm going to go to Purdue. Or we hired the New York Giants linebacker coach. What? Hey, guys, here's your new coach. All that's going on in Tennessee as well. I want to welcome on. I'm going to call him good friend of the program, good friend of ours from VolQuest.com. That's the On3 Network. Nothing wrong with that. Eric Kane, how you doing, brother?
Hey, man, doing well. Hope you are.
I am. Yeah, but you were on the line there, bringing you on. Spring practice, I understood always the let's keep the players in the program by being ambiguous about playing time, but there were always still some conclusions, and it looked like spring practice was really a thing. This now, to me, is seeming that players testing spring for a week and then bolting or bringing in new coaches halfway through spring, it really is a different environment. Have you been experiencing any of this as well there in Knoxville?
No, not to that extent. Now, there was one assistant coaching change. You know, Alex Golish left for the head coaching job at USF.
And, yeah, that was normal,
and
though.
Kind of promoted from within. That was done a while ago, right? There's been nobody bolting from practice as of right now. So not to that extent, but, I mean, there is another window in the transfer portal, right? And that's after spring practice. That's for everybody. So you're seeing these guys go through, kind of seeing where they're at in the pecking order, and then they can say, well, do I want to go play somewhere else? Yep. Can I go make more money somewhere else or stay here? It's just a new era, that's for sure.
And so, you know, I ask you that, and I already kind of knew the answer because I've talked about this before. There are certain, you know, just like giant potholes that a program, their season, can drive into. And I said Tennessee seems kind of immune to some of these. When you lose your starting quarterback and your play caller, your OC, that hurts you. Well, I don't – Joe Milton and Josh Heupel, that kind of like – it's different with Tennessee. I think the same thing here. There's a lot. There is as much positive momentum with the program right now, in my opinion, as when I watched that. Was it the Chancellor that November day or December going, here's all the stuff we've done wrong for 3 years. And I was like, woman, stop talking. I think it's as positive now as negative it was then. Give me a general view of the program, because the feel around it is really, really in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree with you. As you pointed out, like, you lose your quarterback, who should have been a Heisman finalist, who was fantastic for two seasons. You lose your offensive coordinator and a guy who was heavily involved in game planning and calling plays. You lose that after one season, and you're probably going to take a big step backwards offensively the next year. But it just doesn't feel like that, right? I mean, Joe Milton is not Hendon Hooker. Joe Milton will never be Hendon Hooker. He is a different type of quarterback, right? But he's been in college for what feels like a decade. He's going on his third year in the system here at Tennessee. He's come on and played in place of Hendon Hooker and looked really, really good. And also, I mean, losing Alex Golish, I mean, that's big, but this is still Josh Heupel's offense. And Joey Halsley has been with Josh Heupel for 15 years. Glenn Ellerbe, offensive line coach, has been with Josh Heupel for 8-9 years. So there's so much continuity here still. And I would agree with you. There's so many positive vibes around Tennessee football right now. Depth is finally where you want it to be. You're an attractive place for the portal and for traditional recruiting. And you're winning some ball games now. So, I would say that it's very, very positive right now here for Tennessee. And it was not that long ago when things were completely the opposite.
Yeah, I'm trying. I think it was the Chancellor. And I was like, please stop talking. Like, somebody take the mic away from her. But I understood the whole thing they were setting it to. We ain't paying Jeremy Pruitt. So you kind of had to lay yourself out there. Continuing with our good friend Eric Kane. I heard Rodney Garner talking about, we may have some talent. We have some older guys. We don't have anybody who's the alpha out there. And if there's one thing I know about Rodney Garner, attitude and chest out, that matters to him.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's going to tell you exactly what he's thinking, right? He's not going to sugarcoat anything. I mean, he's been doing this for so long. He's going to play 10 to 12 guys. He's done that at every stop he's been at Auburn for years. He did it at Georgia, did it, you know, with Tennessee here the last couple of years. So that type of stuff matters. You want to have veterans who have been in the program that know the expectations, know how to be coached by Rodney Gardner, but also you need to get guys that can go and make plays. And this defensive line's been pretty good under Rodney Gardner. It can be better in getting to the quarterback with four men. I mean, obviously that's what you want. That's what any team wants. And Tennessee can get pressure, but a lot of times they have to bring somebody from linebacker or from the secondary. That's the next step for this defensive line. You lose Byron Young, who was a really, really good player. Lose Latrell Bumpus on the other side, who was just steady Eddie. I mean, he was not an all-conference player at all, but he was the player that Rodney Gardner loved. But you still played 10 other guys last year. So you created depth, and you returned so much, and you add some more pieces and young guys on that edge that are long and explosive and just need to learn how to do some things. And I like this defensive line group. But for Rodney Gardner, they're nowhere near where they need to be, and that's fair. They probably won't be by game one, but a trademark of those groups is they get better and better every single week, and that's what I'm expecting here in spring practice.
Couple more questions, Eric Kane. I want to say, who's the Jeremy Banks attitude-wise, toughness-wise, at linebacker? Not penalty-wise or get suspended for the South Carolina game, Jeremy Banks, but who's the attitude guy?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I don't know if I have an answer to that right now. I don't know if Tennessee has one of those guys in the room right now that I've seen. Keenan Peely coming over from BYU, I don't think he's that guy. I mean, he looks the part, right? He is big. You can tell he's played a whole lot of football, and he's going to play football for Tennessee. Aaron Beasley's never really been that guy. And then you have some younger guys. Elijah Herring stepping up as a freshman that saw some run last year, now a sophomore. And, you know, Arian Carter, a true freshman early enrollee, along with Jeremiah T. Lander and Jalen Smith. I don't know if Tennessee has that guy in the room. If they do, we'll see it the more and more we see these guys play. But Jeremy Banks he got better at linebacker for sure. He was a really good player, but he obviously did have that attitude and that presence that you like in a linebacker, but obviously you want it to be controlled.
All right, last thing for you, and I've told folks, like, there is, and I'll use Tennessee, I was like, there is a Tennessee fan in, like, Cleveland, Tennessee. He or she will always know more about the Vols than I ever will because they watch literally every single snap every Saturday. Most of us treat a team like a hotel, like we check in for a day and then we check out, you know, oh, they're playing Florida.
Yeah.
I saw Danico Slaughter a couple of times last year. I was like, that kid's making plays. He's passing licks.
Yep.
What is he really? Is that because, like I said, I checked into Tennessee, like, you know, 7-8 Saturdays. Did I get the really good Danico Slaughter, but he's incomplete? What is that kid?
So Danico Slaughter is a guy that didn't play. You know, that was his third year in the program last year. And he made one start his first game ever during the COVID season. And then we haven't seen him since outside of special teams. When Jalen McCullough was dismissed the field issues for a couple of games, he went to safety. When McCullough came back, they put Danico Slaughter at corner, and he performed better at corner. He showed more poise, more upside, the ability to go track the ball, to go come downhill and make hits than anybody Tennessee had. Yeah, he ain't scared at all. And so he's at corner now, and if his only focus is playing cornerback, I'm intrigued to see how good he can be. Sure, he made some mistakes last year. He was not as consistent as you want him to, but again, a guy that never played until halfway through the year and then switched to cornerback, right? So I think he's Tennessee's best cornerback. He's at corner now. I'm excited to see what he can be like when focusing on that the entire offseason. But you're right. In a secondary that I think will improve, a secondary that needs to improve, I think Danico Slaughter can be the leader of that group and can just be really good because he's got it in terms of going and ball hawking, coming down the field and hitting people. Just needs to stay consistent, and I think he can do that.
Yeah, and like I said, like I think it was the Bama game. I was like, he had a couple of hits. I was like, whoa. I was like, who's that? I was like, I remember him. I had forgotten he was with the program. But good for him getting a final go around because he could be a star maybe, you know, in his final season. All right, last thing I want to ask you really, because I'm about to describe something and it absolutely cannot happen. Tennessee can lose to Virginia in week one. And that cannot happen. It absolutely cannot happen. Is there any talk? Is there like real respect, or is this all about, and then we're going to go to Gainesville and we're going to get back at South Carolina and we got Bama? Like, is there any conversation? I hadn't heard two words about Virginia, and I know a bunch of Tennessee people.
No, you're exactly right. And I've been thinking a little bit of that the last couple of weeks. We're not to the phase in the offseason yet where we're truly, you know, we got our schedules out. We're saying, all right, this is going to be a win. This is going to be a loss. We're still in the, all right, the season was just over. It was great. These guys going to pro day, the combine. Oh, spring practice is here. We're going to get to that sooner or later. But I agree with you. You know, Tennessee won 10 games in the regular season last year. That's probably not going to happen this year because you lost so many good players. But can you win 9? I think you can easily win 9. If you're going to win 9 or one of those numbers, you can't afford to lose to Virginia. But Tennessee replacing so much and trying to figure it out, that's a big-time game in week one because a lot of teams don't look great in week one. And I think Virginia's got some players that can hurt you. But there's not a whole lot of talk about it right now, but I completely agree with, you know, Alabama on that schedule, with South Carolina coming to town, with Kentucky getting a better quarterback, in my opinion. Georgia, of course, Texas A&M coming to Neyland.
That's and Nashville's fun.
Yeah, and Nashville is fun. So that is a game you can't lose, but I would assume that Tennessee fans will start talking about that here shortly after spring practice.
Man, and I've got to have to admit that, I mean, I have to assume that that's going to be a home game, right? I mean, there's no other chance.
Without a doubt. Yes. Yeah, without a doubt.
All right. And it's not going to be, you know, I was mentioning the other day the game at the racetrack where everybody, I have to be there, and they're like, yeah, I can't really see the game, not really. this is going to be a completely different NFL game. It's fantastic. Eric, appreciate you as always, brother. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Eric King, Locked On. So that's what cannot happen, man. You can't have this huge offseason of we actually did beat Bama and we didn't compete against Georgia, but they went 15-0 and won the national championship. So this is where we are as a program, and the end of the season, the fall off, well, that just, you know, you're a Tennessee fan right now. All it is ahead, forward, more, better, higher. And I haven't heard any conversation, and it's March, and there's still April, May, June, July, and August. And the game is Saturday, September 2nd. It is the week one neutral site sort of paycheck game. Promoter, hey, let's put this in Nashville, and there'll be fewer tickets, but we'll charge double. And so, see, that's how you can do it. If you only have like 72,000 seats instead of 101,000, you sell 70% of the tickets, but you charge 200% of the face value. So, and then you get sponsors. Welcome to the Gatorade Nashville Classic. So I have in Nashville's fun. The reason I threw that in there, I want to get back to that. I don't know. Nan, you partied in Nashville? When I say partied, I mean like grown man, old guy party.
Oh, yeah. I've done it all.
Man, well, actually, no, you've done young person party. You've done, like, I'm single college football weekend guy party.
100%. And you, I know,
that's right. I've done, I'm married and I'm here for a weekend, or I'm here for a football game, but I wear a sport coat in the press box now. I've done that in Nashville. I'm not fun. Dan, I'm not fun, am I?
I mean, you got your moments. I think you sell yourself a little short.
I have my moments in Nashville. Like, that's what I'm saying. I am not normally a fun person in Nashville. I'm like, man, this is fun. And so the whole thought about it is about, let's go down to Second Avenue. We'll do this. And we got the Country Music Hall of Fame and so many good vittles. And you can go to, like, the American Picker store. There's a lot. Nashville's awesome. And there's a game, too. And if you ever want a sour, you don't want, like, Charlotte. I mentioned, I was like, there are so many fans. You've turned on Charlotte. You don't want to be there anymore. Nashville, for a place that's legit, big time, over the top, maybe top of the list sort of fun, lose to Virginia and derail all of this feel good. You want a wet blanket? That, because you know what you follow that up with? Home against Austin Peay. The whole season just became a thud. So you can't do it. Can't do it. Oh, by the way, and then you still do have to actually go to Gainesville. and you have to play South Carolina and Texas A&M, and you're in Tuscaloosa. So, I mean, you still have all of those games out there waiting on you. Record-wise, win-loss-wise, you don't want this. Momentum-wise, where you are, you can't have it. You can't lose that game, man. All right, we break. Come back. The end of hour one is next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I have no thoughts on my permanent opponent. It's not my job to pick them, so I'm not going to whine or cry about it. I'm not going to complain. I'm going to take whoever they get us and try to beat them.
Cha-ching. Kirby Smart. Recorded from the back of the room, I guess. Kirby Smart talking to the Making Touchdown Club. And he is saying that he was asked, obviously, the Q&A is what everybody wants at these. Everybody wants the Q&A, and they like the comments, for real, but they want the Q&A. And so I'm going to promise, this is what happened at the Making Touchdown Club, and that was Kirby Smart. He had been asked, Coach, who do you prefer to play as your three permanent opponents? And his response was, I don't care. Now, he didn't want to be, you know, like arm's length standoffish like that, but Kirby don't care. Now, he does care. He wouldn't want it to be LSU, Alabama, and, you know, Florida or whoever. I don't think he would want that. But he understands it's not going to be easy regardless. And anything that you say isn't going to – there's literally no win, because even if you say the correct three, well, hey, he didn't say Tennessee. He scared us. He's like, I don't care. Just tell me who the three are. He's like, that's what I want. Now, this is what almost every touchdown club and Making Touchdown Club. I've spoken there. It's fantastic. Plus you get to eat. And I always go early and eat in Making, a place called the Rookery. But I mean, my gosh, you talk about culture and history and Little Richard and the Allman Brothers and all that. So, the touchdown club in Macon, it's like the quarterback club or whatever else, and it's a fantastic thing. You show up, there's vittles, there is a business meeting, you hand out the raffle winner from last week and the picks, whoever picked the fewest and did the worst job in the picks contest, and they have to wear an embarrassing hat the rest of the meeting. And then you have some other things and hand out the player of the week, and then the guest speaker that night speaks, and if they're doing it right, you speak for about 8 minutes. And then you say, hey, what's the Q&A? And then everybody else, that's what you want. And get right to what people want to hear. They want the Q&A. I have a direct question. So tell them, you know, in general, you can figure, you know, the big things. Get to what folks want, Q&A. And so that was part of the Q&A, I would almost guarantee you. Because Kirby would not, in his 8 minutes, go, hey, and by the way, scheduling-wise, I don't care. That was a response to a question. Dan, how's your Wednesday?
A couple of things. Number one, you know, usually at these, off-season, talking season events, the touchdown clubs, they don't have a lot of molt boxes. And for those of you that don't know what a molt box is, it's for us in radio, TV, be able to plug in our recorders, and then you get the on-the-mic sound, you know, so they don't necessarily focus on those things. I do love a good dive bar, though. I mean, you brought up a great point about Nashville, and I also do love a good dive bar that's not as crowded, because sometimes I do just want to be able to sit in a nice bar stool that's got a back on it and be able to have a nice drink or two and then have a good time. So it's just pretty much whatever I'm in the mood for. But there have been plenty of good times there in Nashville. Chuck, is it very rare that somebody can say something into a microphone, and somebody being a coach, and can really offend three different parties of people? Jimbo Fisher did it last week, and we kind of glossed over it a little bit, but my good buddy Blake Topmeyer from USA Today, yeah, who I'm going to have on this week's edition of the Southern Beat, he brought up in a podcast that he recently did Jimbo's comments of, quote, it's not scheme, it's execution. Everybody does the same thing. There's not a hill of beans between anybody as far as what goes on. Coaches. He's offended them. Lane Kiffin is actually the guy who shared this a little bit earlier on social media and even tagged Kirby Smart in it to be like, oh, hey, it doesn't necessarily matter what we do. That's good to know. How about that? Players. Basically telling his own players, you know what? You've been the guys that have been messing this thing up. I mean, I've got all the answers here. I'm the genius here. You guys are the morons that can't get this right. And then your fan base, where you're insulting their intelligence in terms of what they should expect and what they do believe they deserve as a fan base for a certain school. And Texas A&M's fan base, that's the reason why Jimbo Fisher is there. Chuck, you take away Jameis Winston. You take away Devontae Freeman. You take away Dalvin Cook. And what has this guy been in his career? He's been pedestrian at best. I'm telling you, he has another season that's remotely what last year is. This time next year, we're going to be talking to a Texas A&M coach, and who knows, maybe we'll actually get to talk to that next Texas A&M coach.
It wasn't even Devonta. It wasn't anybody else. It wasn't the defense. It was Jameis. You had a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, redshirt freshman, never played, and you had two straight undefeated regular seasons with Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston's a goofball and a knucklehead, and you know he's all kinds of things. He's not like a criminal bad guy. Don't want him around. He's just goofy, and I never really thought that on. I was like, act like a quarterback. When the ball was in his hands in college, boy, he did. Even the second year when he threw more interceptions than anybody was expecting. But it's not an off-target point or even very provocative at this point. I'm looking at Jimbo going, you had two outstanding years with a generational quarterback and then everything else.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY. And there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required. And they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.